right now to New York?
I have no idea, but you have some weird noise behind you. You must be outside or something.
Okay. I wanted to let him know that I might be coming, you know. So, don't want to totally surprise him.
That he left before I could get in. Our longest or furthest distance listener tonight is from the Arabian side of the Red Sea. The gentleman's name is M-A-A-N. I will not do him the disrespect of trying to pronounce it, but the prize tonight goes to Hotel Zulu 1, Zulu Hotel. I don't know if they're still listening or not, but one of these nights we'll have to be able to get him into the audio link.
Yep, that sounds cool. Yeah, I didn't bother to check in. I've been kind of like busy doing what I have to do here. I'm putting together a stupid PowerPoint for the other work that I have for my consulting thing that's got to be done in the morning, so I haven't been paying too much attention.
No problem. Well, I'm going to get hustling here. I've got to get done out of here, get back home, and I've got a telephone service call tomorrow, so. Anyway, have a good evening. I'll catch you later. 73YO is clear.
All right, buddy. I just downloaded Newsline. I think I'm going to play it. That could be something to listen to while I'm making myself nuts. Hey, 2YO. Hey, 2 John.
Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1708 with a release Friday, May 7th, 2010. To follow in 5, 4, 3, 2. The following is a QSP. Skywarn hams on alert as tornadoes hit in mid-America. A solar wind brings DX to 6 meters. The first ever U.S.-based 4-meter beacon comes on the air. A ham is arrested for allegedly harassing police and fire communications in California. And a Nebraska radio club gets an unexpected reward for its public service during a recent telephone outage. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1708, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent, on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Reno, Nevada, here is Don Carlson, KQ6 FM.
Skywarn volunteers supported local rescue radio operations during the recent tornado outbreaks in Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Tennessee. This as severe weather outbreaks developed in what the Storm Prediction Center described as particularly dangerous situation and prompting the activation of severe weather watches. Volunteers like these hams near Little Rock, Arkansas, quickly went on alert.
Hey, Kyle, Mark, you're up. Man, Kyle, that's RB. Okay, the tornado over Valonia, according to AWIN, has not touched down yet outside of Valonia. They did see it go over Valonia, but it did not touch down. They didn't get a report of that as of yet. It has passed the city of Valonia, though.
Since April 24th, 15 of the 16 tornado-related deaths were reported in Mississippi, Arkansas, and Tennessee, with 5 coming at one time in Choctaw County, Mississippi. During this severe weather outbreak, Skywarn volunteers provide ground intelligence to local emergency managers and the National Weather Service. Meantime, as part of their training, a German Skywarn team is visiting the United States this month. Their mission is to obtain information to use in the continued development of a similar program in their home nation. So far, the team has visited the National Weather Center and is planning stops at emergency management programs across the United States Southern Great Plains. A high-speed solar wind stream hit Earth's magnetic field the night of May 2nd and into the early hours of May 3rd. The eruption sparked a geomagnetic storm that lasted more than 15 hours and bringing with it some interesting propagation. In Scandinavia, the northern lights were so bright they could be seen through the glow of the midnight sun. Meantime, what's reported as a red-colored aurora spilled across the Canadian border and was spotted in several northern U.S. states. Some good 6-meter auroral DX is reported to have accompanied the aurora. Later in the day on May 3rd, there was a major transequatorial opening to the Caribbean and South America DX stations reported as heard or worked in eastern and central North America during the storm included P43JB on Aruba on 50.099 running CW, FM5CD in Martinique on 50.096 using CW, PJ2LS in the Netherlands Antilles on 50.162 single sideband, and LU8YD in Argentina on 50.120, also on SSB. Meantime, a west-to-east e-skip opening brought the mountain states into Southern California. Stations like K0DU were strong enough to be recorded off an FT-847 transceiver and an EAE loop only 6 feet off the ground at the Newsline studio. This as he worked a station in Grid Square DM04.
About 5:53 into Dock Marion 5, southwest of Grand Junction, Colorado. Over.
To the north, Dave Bernhardt, N7BV in Boring, Oregon, says over the VHF reflector that his first contact was at 1711 UTC with Abe Wagner, W7CI, down in Sierra Vista, Arizona. He also heard beacons from California, Mexico, and South America. Perhaps the biggest surprise was the AM activity detected on 50.4 megahertz. While signals were far too weak to detect much audio or even get a call sign, the type of fading indicated them to be e-skip and likely from the same regions being heard down the band on CW and SSB. In all, it was a good day on the 50 megahertz band for any ham who bothered to listen or call CQ. As we go to air, sporadic openings on 6 meters are still continuing. A United States-based 4-meter beacon is on the air, but it's not a ham radio system. On Monday, May 3rd, the 70.005 megahertz beacon using the experimental call WE9XFT took the airwaves from Bedford, Virginia with a power level that may make it receivable in the British Isles and other areas of Europe. The new beacon is the brainchild of Brian Justin, WA1ZMS. Back in January, Justin filed an application with the FCC for a special temporary authority to operate a propagation beacon in the 4-meter band for domestic as well as transatlantic reception tests. WE9XFT is running 3 kilowatts of effective radiated power on 70.005 megahertz beaming towards Europe. It is operating 24 hours a day, and the experimental license is valid until September 1st. Reception reports should be sent to Brian by email to wa1zms@att.net. Authorities have arrested a 29-year-old San Jacinto, California ham who investigators allege interrupted police and fire radio communications and made threats over the air during a 2-day period. Mark Abramovich, NT3V, has been following the story and has more.
Police closed in on Irene Levy, KJ6DEY, just seconds after she made a final transmission on a Hemet, California police frequency using a commercial HT. Investigators from Hemet as well as Cal Fire say the unauthorized random transmissions made from Levy's mobile home in San Jacinto went beyond nuisance calls. Hemet Police Sergeant Mark Richards was quoted by the Press Enterprise newspaper in Riverside as saying Levy disguised her voice as a man and made references to the deaths of police and firefighters and made bomb threats. He said some of the transmissions came during a Cal Fire search and rescue call, a major traffic accident, and a brush fire. The report stated the transmissions began May 1st and ended in the early morning hours of May 3rd. Richard said in the report that direction-finding equipment helped locate Levy, who in one of her transmissions on May 2nd suggested, quote, police would never find her, unquote. Richard's report stated that during the raid on her trailer, police seized 11 radios, 7 scanners, radio frequency list, computer equipment, and miscellaneous radio gear. This in the report, they also seized Levy's technician license, showing it had been issued in September 2009. Levy was charged on suspicion of making terrorist threats, falsely reporting a bomb threat, and maliciously interrupting, disrupting, impeding, or interfering with a transmission on a public radio frequency. Close to the investigation, tell Amateur Radio Newsline that authorities believe Levy acted alone and without the knowledge of her husband, Michael, KE6ALV, who has been licensed since 1993. On her QRZ.com bio page, Levy claims to have a General Mobile radio service license. The call sign is actually registered to her husband, Mike. Levy also claims she monitored the Keller Peak repeater as well as the Hemet repeaters. Yes, in that bio, she was active on Citizen Band Radio prior to getting married, described herself as a CB'er at heart. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V.
As this report is being prepared, Levy is being held in lieu of $50,000 bail. It's unknown if she is represented by counsel. Still with enforcement news, the FCC has affirmed a $10,000 fine it had previously issued Paul Hezard Sanat. This for his alleged operation of an unlicensed radio transmitter on 91.3 megahertz in Orlando, Florida. Back on March 2nd, the Commission's Tampa office of the Enforcement Bureau issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture in the amount of $10,000 to Sanat. Since that time, Sanat has not filed a response to the NAL. On April 29th, and based on the information before it, the FCC has affirmed the forfeiture and given Sanat the customary 30 days to pay or file an appeal. Since the beginning of the year, the FCC's enforcement effort in the private radio area seems concentrated in two areas. These are violations of Part 95 rules governing the 11-meter citizens radio service and ridding repeaters of unwanted users in the amateur service. A quick count of enforcement letters issued since January 1st shows 9 warning notices sent to individuals for violations of Part 95. Most of these were for running overpowered transmitters on 11 meters that were causing interference to their neighbors' home electronics. In each case, the CB operator in question was given 10 days to respond to the FCC and to outline the specific steps taken to bring that 11-meter CB station into compliance with the Commission's rules. In the area of ham radio, 4 hams have received warning letters ordering them to stay off of various repeaters. In each case, the FCC notes that the letter's recipient was requested by the repeater owner or control operator to refrain from using the system, but either refused or failed to do so. So the Commission is now backing the system licensees and control stations by ordering the unwanted users to cease. If they fail to heed the agency's enforcement warning, they could face such penalties as license modification, proceeding to restrict the frequencies upon which a given ham may operate, a fine, or even revocation of their amateur service licenses. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including KC4HAZ Repeater Network, serving all of Central Florida. If you are a radio club that holds federal government tax-exempt status, listen up. You're in danger of losing that standing unless you file a tax statement with the Internal Revenue Service by May 15th. So says the ARRL in a special bulletin issued earlier this week. Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has details of what federally tax-exempt clubs have little time to do.
Changes made 3 years ago to federal tax laws could cause many radio clubs to lose their tax-exempt status this year. To protect themselves, clubs that are tax-exempt under Section 501C of the Internal Revenue Code must file the required IRS annual return to report before the deadline, which is May 15th, for those organizations with corporate calendar years. Many clubs have, at some time in the past, applied for tax-exempt status under Section 501c3 as charitable organizations, Section 501c4 as civic leagues, or Section 501c7 for recreational clubs. Years ago, any club with gross receipts averaging less than $25,000 per year was not required to file annual returns with the IRS. However, after 2006, such clubs have been required to file a Form 990N. This is a simple postcard with minimal information. It is due by the 15th day of the 5th month after the close of each fiscal year. Some clubs may not have been aware of these new requirements or didn't bother to comply. Even those that filed in a prior year may have neglected to keep up with the required filings as officers changed from year to year. Well, it turns out that Section 6033J of the Federal Tax Code provides that failure to file Form 990, 990EZ, or 990N for 3 consecutive years results in revocation of an organization's tax-exempt status as of the filing due date for the 3rd return. That filing date for calendar year 2009 is only a few weeks away. If you are a club officer and are uncertain who is responsible for IRS filings or whether such filings are current, you should determine your filing status as soon as possible and take immediate steps to file the current and any missed prior year IRS form. Going forward, your club's board should assign the responsibility for compliance filings with a designated officer and document that responsibility in the written job description for the position so that subsequent holders of the office are made aware of the requirements. This is the only way to make certain that your tax-exempt status remains in place. The Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
The bottom line, if you have questions about your club status, you may wish to consult a certified public accountant or other tax advisor versed in not-for-profit tax law. In going through the various warning letters, we found none dealing with the situations on various frequencies on 75 and 20 meters that seem to be the talk of the amateur radio community. nor was there any mention in regard of collecting any fines previously issued to those the agency determined to be in violation of the Part 97 rules. The only non-repeater issue found went to a ham accused of operating with a call other than the one assigned to him. All of these letters are available to the general public on the FCC's enforcement webpage. It can be found at the link provided in this week's printed Amateur Radio Newsline report. A war, albeit right now only a war of words, appears to be brewing between television broadcasters and the FCC. This over the latter's desire to reclaim spectrum from the former to be auctioned to wireless broadband providers. Amateur Radio Newsline's David Black, KB4KCH, is at the Southeast Bureau with more.
Calling the FCC's national broadband plan the Great Spectrum Grab, National Association of Broadcasters President Gordon Smith tells a broadcaster at the now-concluded NAB conference in Las Vegas that the spectrum reclamation portion of the plan was an example of unnecessary government intervention. In what the trade press describes as a gloves-off keynote speech to the annual convention, Smith told the audience that broadcasters were not a spectrum ATM, and that the government needs to do a thorough inventory of where the spectrum is, who has it, how it's being used. It also has to look carefully at compression technologies before squeezing broadcasters out. Smith also says the FCC plan does not recognize the life-saving or lifeline values of broadcasting. He notes that people who would be most hurt by the new broadband plan are the disadvantaged and the elderly. He notes that 15% of households rely exclusively on free over-the-air television, and that number appears to be growing in the post-digital television transition. The commission wants another 120 megahertz from television broadcasters within 5 years. It's proposing to get it via a voluntary program in which broadcasters would be compensated from some of the proceeds from the spectrum, which would be re-auctioned for wireless broadband. But the commission has also noted that it might unilaterally reallocate spectrum if broadcasters fail to cooperate. In an interview a week earlier, Smith signaled that he was going to be tough on the plan, which he has compared to an offer from the mob that carries with it an implied threat.
The FCC believes that the current television broadcast spectrum is the best place for expansion of broadband. If it cannot cut a deal with the broadcast community and acts unilaterally, the matter could wind up in the courts and bring broadband expansion to a halt for years. Alcatel-Lucent Bell Labs say they can now send data at rates of up to 300 megabits per second down telephone lines. According to a press release, the labs achieved 300 megabits per second over a distance of 400 meters and 100 megabits per second over 1 kilometer by making use of the so-called DSL phantom mode. This involves the creation of a virtual or phantom channel that supplements the two physical wires that are the standard configuration for copper transmission lines. The increase in transmission capacity arises from the use of analog phantom mode technology in combination with other industry standard techniques. These are the vectoring that eliminates crosstalk between copper wires and bonding that makes it possible to take individual lines and combine them. This DSL service makes use of the high-frequency radio spectrum to send data over telephone lines. There is no mention in the Alcatel-Lucent Bell Labs press release of how much radio interference this new development could possibly cause. To date, DSL has had no impact on ham radio operations, and there's little reason to believe this could change. The Cayman Islands governor and cabinet has adopted a set of regulations to govern that nation's amateur radio service. The effect of the new law will be to create a plan for the issuance of amateur radio licenses by the Cayman Islands Information and Communications Technology Authority to persons who have satisfied the certification process by way of examination of their knowledge and competence with respect to electricity and radio, including amateur radio apparatus. The new rules also allow for the recognition of licenses issued by the United Kingdom and other countries, which have agreed to grant, with respect to the Cayman Islands, reciprocal amateur radio operating privileges. These new regulations were developed in collaboration with the Cayman Amateur Radio Society. As an Information and Communications Technology Authority agent, the Society will administer the examination for licensed applicants. The new regulations came into effect following their publication in the Cayman Islands Gazette on March 29th. Cuba is going into the ham radio transceiver business, at least domestically. This is a prototype of the new Higaran low-cost 1.8 megahertz transceiver, which was presented at the 8th Congress of the Cuban Ham Radio Federation. The prototype transceiver was manufactured at one of the factories controlled by the Cuban Ministry of Informatics and Communications. It's designed to put out 20 watts on 160 meters with additional hardware. It can also operate on the 80 and 40 meter bands. The chair of the Cuban Ham Radio Federation is Pedro Rodriguez, CO2RP. He told the Cuban news agency that the first 600 units are ready for delivery to Cuban amateur radio operators. The radio's primary purpose is to help support emergency communications in Cuba. If the information on the Hamvention Yahoo Group's reflector is correct, then there's a new player in town to rival Alinco, ICOM, Kenwood, and Yaesu in the dual-band handheld radio competition for your dollar. The new company is called Wuxon.us, and their first radio for the United States market is their new model KG-UV1P 2-meter and 70-centimeter dual-bander to be available at the Dayton Hamvention. In a news release, Wuxon US says that it will be at booth number 172, just inside the North Hall entrance and to the right. The company says that it will have 100 units plus accessories packed up and ready to go at a special Hamvention price. The news release did not specify what the price tag will be, but from Hong Kong dealers advertising on eBay, these radios come complete with a rechargeable battery, desktop drop-in charger, auxiliary earphone, and belt clip seem to sell for an average of around $80 plus $40 shipping to the United States. That said, few expect the price to be that low in a retail environment such as Hamvention or your favorite radio store. The home company is Quanzhou Wuxon Electronics Company Limited of Fujian, China. It says that the new ham radio dual bander has received FCC certification. More on the new radio is online at www.wuxon.us. And speaking about Hamvention 2010, its doors open on Friday, May 14th. Amateur Radio Newsline will have several reporters at Hamvention 2010. We hope to see many of you there. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. The changing of the guard in ham radio continues with word of the passing of famed DXer Vince Thompson, K5VT, who passed away on April 24th. Thompson was best known as a DXpeditioner, known for activating many African countries, and founder of the Voodoo Contest Group. A physician, K5VT trained doctors overseas and practiced medicine in the Phoenix, Arizona area. Thompson also served as the ARRL Southwestern Division representative to the league's DX Advisory Committee. And Gary Stilwell, KI6T, served as Southwestern Division Vice Director in the 1973 era when he was W6NJU, has also become a silent key. Stilwell had relinquished the post when he moved to Sacramento in Northern California for his work with the California Transportation Agency, also known as Caltrans. He was a well-known DXer at the top of the DXCC honor roll. Stilwell was also the founder and original owner of the Radio Place, a Sacramento store serving the needs of that city's amateur radio community. One of the organizers of the recent EME operation using 1,000-foot dish in Arecibo says the operation was a definite success. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Davis has the details.
WSJT inventor Joe Taylor, K1JT, has provided a report on the recent KP4AO amateur radio moonbounce operation from the Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico. According to K1JT, the wall of stations calling was simply incredible. A rough estimate suggests that the Arecibo group may have worked something like 20% of the callers potentially workable on sideband, 10% of those workable on CW, and only a few percent of those workable on JT65. From Joe's memory, he says that the log shows nearly completed 240 QSOs with some 57 DXCC entities in a total of 8 operating hours. He notes that they made recordings of the whole 432 MHz EME subband, where most of the time KP4AO was on the air. He says that in due course, it will be possible to, once again, tune the band again, carefully picking out call signs. If and when this is done, he'll be happy to post a list of received call signs. In the meantime, Joe has some requests for all of those of you who took part in the operation. If you work KP4AO with a setup significantly smaller than is normally required for EME, please send him a short note describing your antenna, receiver, and transmit power. Or, if you only heard KP4AO, please also send him a note describing your antenna and receiver. Joe's direct email is k1jt@arrl.net.
Again, if you missed that email address where to send your reports, it's k1jt@arrl.net. The United Kingdom's Digital Economy Bill, which will force all analog radio off the air in coming years, has become law. The move came barely a week after a British Parliament's House of Lords report questioned the wisdom of moving all its national and regional radio broadcasting to digital audio broadcasting. It echoed many criticisms voiced over the bill, which is likely to consign all FM and AM radios to landfill in 5 years, except for listening to ultra-local FM stations. But digital radio switchover arguments are unlikely to cease for a long time. This is because the new law constructs a framework of conditions rather than fixing a date. Great Britain's Radio Communications Foundation has announced that it's handling a legacy donation that will help fund the AMSAT UK FunCube project. This grant to the foundation stipulates that the funding must be used for the development of a suitable amateur satellite project. So, the Radio Communications Foundation went looking for a suitable candidate. It found what it was looking for in a proposal from AMSAT UK to use the inheritance to help with a FunCube educational project that has the aim of educating young people about radio, space, physics, and electronics. By way of background, FunCube is the first ever CubeSat designed to benefit young spectators and is expected to be the first British CubeSat to reach space. Its target audience consists of primary and secondary school children. The FunCube satellite itself will feature a 145 megahertz telemetry beacon that will provide a strong signal for the students to receive. A tentative launch date is sometime this fall. This, after FunCube completes its flight readiness review. Small satellite systems and services symposium will take place in Madeira, Spain from May 31st to June 4th, 2010, and this year features a CubeSat workshop. This biennial event covers all aspects of small satellite programs such as flight experiences, mission definition, technologies, launches, ground segment, and data exploitation. An abstract of the papers to be presented can be seen in PDF format at tinyurl.com/2423PAZ. A new 10-meter FM amateur radio repeater has come on the air in Portugal. Sponsored by the Ham Radio Association of Yerra Alta, CQ0HAR operates on European repeater channel RH4 with an input of 29.5 and an output of 29.6 megahertz. A 67-hertz CTCSS tone is required for access CQ0HAR. More on the system is online at www.ct1arb.com. NDX PA7JWC will still be active as 3BH/PA7JWC from Peribear Mauritius Island, AF049, between May 5th and 22nd. Activity will be on the HF bands and 6 meters using CW, SSB, RTTY, and PSK31. QSL via the low TW or to his home call sign direct or by the Dutch QSL Bureau. DF5AU will be active portable HB0 from Liechtenstein through May the 12th. His operation will be on the HF bands using CW and SSB with his focus on 80 meters. QSL via his home call sign. Lastly, listen out for Bulgarian special event station LZ2010KM to be on the air through May 31st. This activity is to celebrate St. Kirill and Methodius Day. Operations will be on all bands and modes. QSL to LZ1BJ by the Bureau, preferred, logs will be updated to low TW. And finally this week, an old adage that says, do good to others and it will be repaid in droves has come true for One Radio Club, a club that has long been known for its dedication to public service. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is here with the details.
Windstream Communications has announced that it is donating $5,000 to Nebraska's Lincoln Amateur Radio Club. This in appreciation of the group's communications support of residents in the Lincoln and Lancaster County 911 Center during the telecommunications outage that took place back on April 1st. As previously reported, the outage occurred after an upgrade to the internal timing system in the switch that posts routing to the 911 system. Roughly 36,000 customers lost landline phone service. The failure of the routing switch interrupted 911 service with cell phones and landlines in at least a dozen counties for nearly 15 hours, forcing authorities to take reports in person and by email. It also led to the call-out of local ARES and Lincoln Club members who were stationed on street corners and at strategic public service agencies, this as a replacement for the interrupted 911 service. Now, Windstream is saying thanks. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ICF. I'm in the newsroom in the City of Angels. Don?
Windstream Communications announced the $5,000 donation to the Lincoln Amateur Radio Club on Monday, May 3rd. At the same time, its spokesman said that the company had determined that timing cables were not in conformance with industry and company specifications. As a result, this had caused the phone system outage. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CGC Communicators, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Pan DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Before we go, a reminder that the nominating period for the 2010 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award closes on May 30th. That gives you only a few short weeks to nominate a deserving teen or preteen radio amateur for this yearly ham radio honor. All nominations and materials required by the official rules must be received by Amateur Radio Newsline no later than midnight on May 30th. Both mail-in and electronic submissions are being accepted this year. Full rules and a downloadable nominating form are now on our website at www.arnewsline.org. Just scroll down until you see 2010 Young Ham of the Year Awards now being accepted and click on the word here to download the directions and the form. You can also leave questions and comments on the official Young Ham of the Year Award page on Facebook.com. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Don Carlson, KQ6FM, saying 7-3 from Reno, Nevada, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2010, all rights reserved. Not connected.
How's your weekend? Back to you.
He was busy and I'm running behind the 8 ball. Just coming up to 110. I'm usually way, way west of here by now.
Figured something was up, could hear it in your voice. Late morning, woke up late, troubles, or just an average Monday?
I go to the yard, pick stuff up. Of course, all the stuff I needed wasn't there for the job I'm going to do. You know, typical stuff, you know. Scrounging around, they're supposed to leave stuff out, they didn't leave stuff out. Couldn't find anything I needed. Well, I hit him, whatever, I call him, tell him, hey, knuckleheads, you forgot this, you forgot that, I could kill us. I could kill us at this point, you know? The weekend was good, the weekend was very good. Because yesterday was old mommy's day things, you know?
Yep, we did the same thing, a little barbecue yesterday, spent it with mom, all that good stuff. So, weekend wasn't bad. Weather could have been better, huh? Felt like the fall. It was horrible.
Yeah, I couldn't believe when I got up. 39 degrees. We're going backwards here.
I just hope this isn't a preview for the summer. I hope we don't have a cold summer. That would be horrible.
Ain't much we can do about it, you know? It is what it is. It is what it is. So... anyway, pulling along. Didn't feel like getting up this morning.
Know that feeling. Warm in bed, alarm clock goes off, just hit that snooze button, which, by the way, was a communist plot, the snooze button. And you just want to roll over and stay in bed. I don't know. It's just not the right way to end the weekend with a Monday. Somebody's got to figure something else out.
Yeah, just keep playing those Mega Millions, Powerballs, and the other one in there. I don't know, maybe someday you'll wake up, find out you're a winner, and be able to call in and say, hey, guess what, guys? Take this job and shove it.
Wouldn't that be nice? Move somewhere warm, never have to worry about snow. If you want to see snow, you just come back and visit family. Then you go back where it's warm. That would be lovely.
Yeah. Go hide up in the woods someplace, you know? Go hide up in the woods. Go by a deserted Caribbean island, you know.
Yeah. Buy an island, call it Johnny Land. Issue your own call signs. Become your own FCC. That would be good.
Yep. We'll be dealing with the garbage I'm dealing with now here. Boron doing 70 miles an hour, and all of a sudden this stupid idiot hits the brakes for no apparent reason. Backs everybody up. I don't know what that was all about.
Well, this is the way people drive. No one knows how to drive anymore. I've noticed that. No one knows the rules of the road. They're not taught like they used to be. People don't follow them like they used to. It's just, it's a whole other world. A whole other world out there. People just don't care about anybody else. They're all out for themselves. What's good for me better be good for everybody else because I'm coming through. That's the way it is today. W2HCB, November 1, WTC.
There are rules to the road, N2ZEP.
Yeah. Morning, Garish. Oh, you do laugh, guys. You come out of my block, you head north, right? You come up to the Montauk Highway. There's two lanes. So you got a left turn arrow, you have a lane, a left turn lane bank, right? It's got an arrow on the ground, points to the left. The lane next to it, you have the option. You can go straight or you can make a right. Well, some moron in the neighborhood petitioned as to why is there a right turn arrow there if there's no right turn directional? I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. You have to be... I found this out. I get home the other day, and I see a crew out there, and they're measuring and they're doing this. I said, what's up? He says, oh, see, why is there a right turn arrow here when all you can do really is go straight? I'm like, are you out of your mind? I said, come here. said, you drive down the road. You want to make go east on Montauk Highway. What lane are you going to be in? He goes, oh, yeah, you're right. I said, why are you guys doing this? Oh, we got a complaint from blah, 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 blah. It's the guy's out of his mind. Unbelievable. Some people, I'm telling you. Anyway, come on. I'm really gonna petition my company to put these big spring bumpers, big rubber spring bumpers on the front of these trucks, and push the button and extend down, and it shows the car flying in front of me. Gary, pick it up, pass it over to Eugene. I'm getting frustrated here.
Good morning, Eugene. Sounds like we have an irate Johnny with us. He's getting traffic woes.
All right.
Yeah, it was a little windy this weekend. Kicked up all the pollen and threw it all in my eyes. I haven't been able to see straight all weekend. Eugene?
Morning, Gary. Didn't all go in your eyes because a lot of it got in my eyes and up my nose and everywhere else. I don't know. Never had allergies till 9/11. And, after 9/11, things have been getting steadily worse, so who knows? Who knows what the truth is? Am I just getting old, or does it have something to do with it? Inquiring minds want to know. And, John, if you ever look on YouTube, there's a video. I think it's called Driving in Baghdad, where this an Army crew, a Marine crew, they're in a Humvee, driving through Baghdad, and I guess they were going to some guys who just got blown up by an IED or, you know, attacked or something, and they're flying through Baghdad, and they're honking their horns trying to get people out of the way, and they would pull behind people, honk their horn once, and then rear-end them, and they would get out of the way. They do this to about 20 cars. It's hilarious. You got to see it. But that might be something on the LIE. Get a Humvee, you can just rear-end people. Get them out of your way. Over to you.
I just gotta resupply my little thing in the door here with the 516 stainless nuts again. That's what I'm gonna have to start doing again. I'm telling you. And yes, Gary, the pollen. Yes, I am on my Zyrtec once again. I had no voice late Friday and Saturday. It's hard to speak because the pollen was just too much for me. Eugene. Yes, myself, never had allergies until that fateful day. So, I just got a thing in the mail. I gotta go for another test. I'm just so excited. Gary?
You know, instead of the bumpers and all that, why don't you just mount the rocket launcher in the grill of the vehicle? That'll get the vehicles ahead of you out of your way. Eugene?
Maybe not even a rocket launcher, just a tube from the rocket launcher.
Might make people think twice.
Nah, that would be fun. Driving down the street with a rocket launcher attached to the top of your car. People would definitely get out of your way. John?
I met up with one of my buddies Friday night. We happen to be at the same restaurant establishment of each other with our families. And I had my truck, he had his truck, and we were yapping this and that. He goes, oh, you guys want to put on my truck? I'm like, why? He goes, you know, we got done with our dinners about the same time. We got to the park a lot. And all of a sudden I hear this loud, horrendous horn. He's got the 5-chime diesel horns mounted in the front grill. What a sound, man. His wife's just shaking her head. I said, I gotta get me a set of those. Gotta love it. Anyway, I'm here on the expressway doing my thing. I gotta go into Dyer and 10th. Joy.
This is the Dumper Mobile, KA2NCD on the Bills Meadowbrook.
Good morning, Dumper. Eugene, instead of mounting the tube from a rocket launcher, because not everyone will notice that and understand what it is. How about just mounting a 50 caliber machine gun up there? That might do even better as far as scare tactics, especially if you have it motorized so that by a flick of a switch you can have it pan left and right, up and down. They'll actually think it works. Duffer, give it to Eugene, N2ZEP here.
Good morning, and good morning. Morning, John. Good morning, Gary, and good morning, Eugene. We are moving right along here on the Globe Meadowbrook. Nice clip. And I guess one of the best, but have a bunch of cannon on top of your roof. That'll be very well. As long as after you fire it, you still have control of the vehicle from the G-force of the cannon going off. Eugene, pick it up.
Morning, Dumper. And cannons are nice, but they're so 5 minutes ago. Everybody has cannons. Nice rocket launcher, high-tech rocket launcher. Some rockets, heat-seeking rockets. Go right up the other guy's tailpipe. That would be nice. But then again, I digest. I think that's the word. I'm too tired today. I digress. I know you're all laughing at me. All right, John, over to you.
I know a guy drives around in a retired Desert Storm Humvee. He's got the 50 cal machine gun mount and the actual machine gun on the mount. And he drives around with that. It's pretty interesting. I ran into him at a job site one day. And he says, yeah, he goes, the thing still works. I said, are you serious? He says, oh yeah, I'm dead serious. He goes, I got it disabled right now, but if I go out to the range, I've actually shot the thing at the range out east. I'm like, you're out of your mind. He goes, hey, gotta stay in practice. I don't want to go to work today. I really don't want to go to work today. Gary, over to you. W2HCV.
You know, I just thought of something. It's not lethal, but it is scary looking. Do you remember from the movie Animal House, the Deathmobile that they created at the end of the movie with the nice shaped wedge on the front is the equivalent of a high-speed plow blade? Just mount that on the front end of your vehicle. That'll get everyone out of your way. Vinny?
N2EB. N2EB, you can pick it up. Then you can turn it over to Eugene. Good morning, John. Well, they actually have those for the locomotives on the railroad lines that get a lot of snow. They have those V-piles. So I'm sure you can buy one of them and hook it up. You can spread the cars like 10 cans on the parkway. And on that note, let me give you the oil report. Oil is trading right now. It's dropped significantly at $75 a barrel. But yet the price is going up at the pump, the usual. John, pick it up.
That's because the refineries want more money. They've got to pay for all that sand that they got to dump along the beaches. Anyway, I don't know what to put, but scare the people that around you? Like a snow plow or a V-shaped thing like Animal House? Yeah, I'd like to get something that to tailgate people. I would like to get, like, eat up some Limburger cheese and, like, let the fumes, like, go right up behind me. Eugene? That's too easy.
KG2, KG2.
KG2, recognized. Well, gentlemen, I'm at the airport already. Have a good day. And yes, the Animal House cake. Cut that nice float. The Animal House Deathmobile came out, if you remember, it said, hilarious. All right, boys, have a good day. November 1, W2C, I'll be clear. Keith, pick it up, hand it over to John, W2HTV. Have a good day.
Hi, Eugene. Take care. Have a good day.
safe out there. And good morning, John. John and Gary, I believe it was in there. Oh my God. I gotta stop this morning. The mate's getting up at 5:15. It's very difficult. All right, John, over to you.
Morning, Keith. What's going on? I was getting aggravated before. I had morons cutting in front of me and then dropping the throttle, you know. He's going along at 30 miles an hour and you're in the middle lane and this moron comes out of the left lane and he dumps the throttle and he's down to 45. I don't get it. Anyway, that's that. So, here we go, jamming on the brakes. Gotta love it. It's gonna be a long ride. Garish?
Well, I hate to tell you this, John, but I'm not getting those problems on the Grand Central. When I first spoke to you and I came on, I was on the Meadowbrook. Now I'm up to 188, so... pretty soon I'll be joining you on the distress way. Number?
Over here by exit 27, we're slowing down a little bit. Following neck of traffic, I was making better time. So, it's off a little later, so you also left a little earlier. So, John, since you're behind me slightly, I'm going to throw some nails out the window to slow you down. John?
How do you know I'm behind you? Could be on the Jackie Robinson by now. You know, I don't see the KA2 mobile around anywhere. Nice. Yep. Good. Quick commute this Monday morning after Mother's Day. Day out. Yesterday, most of the day was out Martha Clara Vineyard. I was over my son's house, my brother-in-law's house. By the time I got home, it was pretty late. So, well, Eugene was feeling tired. Know how he feels. Keith, over to you. Send to Evie.
Oh, yeah. I know how Eugene feels. I hope everybody had a happy Mother's Day. I had my, folks over. We had Chinese food. That was nice. What else? I don't know. That's about it, really. Yeah, John, I know exactly what you're talking about. You know? Let's say somebody is zipping along at 72 miles an hour. 73. And I had a person go by me like I was standing still. They had to be doing at least, I'd probably say in the 90s. I mean, it like made me look like I was in trouble. Guy went by me so fast. Go figure. I don't think going that fast is necessary. Unless you're having a baby. Oh, no, even then. You need to put the baby in the pipe for it. Go figure. John?
Uh-huh. Oh, God. Big stretch. Oh, yeah, I feel good.
I'm up to Utopia Parkway here. One thing, dang. Ding-a-ding-a-dang-dang-dang. And, man, people screaming out by me. They went and re-registered their cars and put a $50 MTA charge on their registrations. Gotta love it, man. It gets you one way or the other. Garish, over to you. I'm here on the stressway, that's for sure. I can see the sign for Queen Boulevard, exit 24, but it's a slow roll.
Yeah, let's hit the motorists to support the MTA. Great. You got that. You got the fact that we've got this extra MTA tax that has to be paid, which, as an employee, you don't feel it. The employer gets hit with it. So that's a lot, lots of fun. Number?
So what else is new? Politics at work. Your dollar going the distance. The usual way. That's the American way. Pay more, work more, get less than your check at the end of the week. John?
Yeah, and then they come out with this new license plate that if you have to get a new registration, you have to get the plate, and because it's going to cost you $25 for the plate. So we'll see that as a very, very slow changeover. And, you know, back to the old basic thing. Anyway. And why did they do that, Keith? Is it for the cameras? I don't think so. Over to you. Send to EV.
Yep. Smile for cameras. I don't know. There's got to be a reason behind it. I can't think of it. Personally, I kind of like the light blue on top or the dark blue on the bottom with the white in the middle with the blue letters. I like the place we had. You know? The yellow ones are kind of like a flashback to the, you know, earlier times. I don't know. Maybe somebody got a great deal on the new colored license plate. We got a kickback. So it's out. I don't know. I think you see the white one's pretty good. No, I haven't seen one yet. Actually, I saw one or two of them, but it's been a while since I've actually seen one. I want to see the difference. You know, looking from 20 feet away, one is a lot easier to make out than the other. So then it might have something to do with the camera. Don't know. E.R. Puzzlement. John?
Well, I can tell you, I was telling my neighbor, the cop, the old plates are much easier to read from an angle and a little further away. They don't lose, it doesn't get, letters don't get bled out in the white. So, they found with the cameras can read them faster too. That's why. Anyway, I hope today goes nice and smooth. I'm not looking for any disasters. Garish?
John, did you say that the blue and white plate was better for the cameras than the blue and orange plate? All right. Maybe that's an incentive to change. Although, I'm looking at one of the blue and orange plates now. It's an ugly plate. Dumper?
Ugly is in the opinion of the beholder.
Beholder it is. You'll pick it up and then you'll turn it over to John. And this is the Dumper Mobile on the Long Island Expressway. And I'm right behind JC Catering, the coffee truck, on to his first assignment. I believe that get that place an option because I believe the state, because of the financial situation, decided against it. So it's your option if you want to get take that plate on. It's not mandatory. It was originally, but then they rescinded that because of the financial situation that the state is in. Would you?
Whatever. Blue plate, white plate, orange plate, green plate, blue plate special. What's the difference? It's all non sequitur to me. Can't you beat me in Mobile? John?
Yep. What I heard is not an option if you get a new registration, if you buy a new car and a used car or whatever. And you have a new registration, you cannot use your old plate. You must get a new plate. An extra $25 on that registration for that time, for that first time. And, if you get another $750 if you want to keep your numbers. Brother, anyway. I don't know why they went to this. It's going to be like, who was like that? Connecticut? There was some, or New Jersey, I forget exactly, but I remember there was a changeover. It's like, I don't even know what state you're in because so many different police that are out there.
Okay. Anyway. Yeah, you're probably right. Probably easy to see. Easy to catch. Camera number recognition. Cameras are probably easy to catch. Any way to make money. Anyway. And I bet you Vinny knows where they are because you're in his GPS. He's got all the cameras in there. We'll all have to have GPSs because of all the cameras that are out there.